Hello, I'm Paddy O'Donnell, and this is The Crimologist from Farrow and Ball, the podcast where paint and colour meet life. In my work as a colour expert for Farrow and Ball, I see every day the power that colour has to transform, not just a room, but a life.
The world is colourful. I always see life in colour.
My first memory when it comes to colour is red. I thought her dress was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen, and I wanted to live in red.
And that's why we've created this series, to explore how colour guides us in our heads, in our hearts, in our life stories.
Do you know, I've got glasses that fit each colour room. So these are my pink ones in my pink room. And so I've got green ones over there, neutral in my bedroom. Not that you're going up there, Patrick.
Why not?
The names are quite funny, aren't they?
They are quite funny.
What's the funniest name, do you think? Dead Salmon's quite funny.
I've never done my life story through colour, and everyone should do this.
So today I'm excited to introduce our guest, Christopher John Rogers, celebrated for his signature flair with colour and pattern. Christopher brings his unmistakable joy to fashion and beyond. Born and raised in Louisiana, Christopher was enamoured by art from a young age, finding inspiration in everything from Ellsworth Kelly to the costumes of comic book characters. Farrow and Ball had the honour of collaborating with Christopher in 2023 for the Carte Blanche collection of paper and paints, inspired by his childhood memories of family, home and food. Christopher, thank you so much for coming here today. Well, coming here, we're obviously talking kind of streaming service. Are you in Brooklyn or Manhattan, or where are you?
I woke up in Brooklyn, but now I'm in Manhattan.
Oh, okay. And I'm in Worcestershire, which is kind of in the middle of England. So
yeah.
I'm in my bedroom.
Nice.
Where are you? In your studio?
Yeah, I'm in my studio, in my office, just hanging out.
Is it full of color? Is it really simple? Is it really organized?
It's not organized at all. I'm incredibly messy and I need to get it together, but the walls are white, some great little like linen curtains with a slight sheen so I can see out, but people can't really see in when it's drawn, and like this color blocked chaise in front of me, and like red and yellow.
So when we finish, are you gonna go and have a little snoozette on your chaise?
Yeah. I need to.
The reason why we're here is to talk about a few colors from your memory. So can we kick off with the first color, which is the color of your childhood? We'd love to know what that is and what that means to you.
Yeah, for sure. I think in terms of like an early childhood memory, I wasn't alive for this, but I do remember looking back at images of my parents' wedding, and one of their colors was this really sort of dusty, earthy pink, which reminds me a lot of the color shallot from the Carte Blanche collection. I love that it feels quite vintage and sweet and kind of very Southern in like a steel magnolia kind of way, but it's electrocuted and made modern with just like a pumped up saturation. And I kind of like that it can ebb and flow between different moods depending on how you use it in the space.
Yes, because it's a really rich pink.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody hasn't seen the Carte Blanche collection yet, but it's not in your face. It's not what I call like a Schiaparelli pink or anything like that.
Right.
There's this lovely strength, but it's quite muted.
It kind of feels like a memory in some way. Yeah.
Did your mother wear a pink dress? Did she wear a kind of shallot dress for her wedding?
Her bridesmaids did. And all of the gentlemen wore shallot ties.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Very 90s.
That sounds fantastic. Because I think in our description, we call it allium, which is obviously the onion family for, you know, those going, what's an allium? Because we obviously talk about alliums over here much more from a flowering allium. So, you know, the allium bulbs you have in the garden, you get through the borders.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, just again, but that lovely kind of banana shallot, you get that gorgeous sort of hue of pink, don't you, on the skin and everything.
Yeah, and I love that it sort of, yeah, like can ebb between pink, slightly more purpley blue at the tip and a bit more white at the base. And I kind of like that it, again, like depending on the lighting, depending on what other colors you pair it with, it can feel incredibly different and nuanced, which I like.
So can you talk a little bit about childhood in Louisiana? Whereabouts in Louisiana were you?
So I was born and raised in Baton Rouge,
okay.
Which I like to think of as like a really big small town. I was really lucky to be placed in situations where I was around a lot of different types of people growing up. And I know that that wasn't always the case for everyone in the South, but I feel like it gave me a really eclectic set of references growing up, which obviously led to my love of color and disparate references.
So where was that resonance of color for you? Where was that coming from? Was it kind of the landscape, the paint used on houses and everything. Have you got lots of weatherboarded houses in Louisiana or Baton Rouge?
Yeah, I think definitely like in New Orleans, people paint the outside of their houses the brightest yellow, the richest red. We're not afraid of color down there. And even like going to church on Sunday, seeing people dressed monochromatically in head to toe apple green or cerulean blue, it just was incredibly arresting. And so I think a lack of fear around color growing up was really important for me.
I've been to a couple of church services in the US.
Oh, really?
And the women just wear the best hats, or they used to. And I was wondering, do they still wear really great hats?
They do. I mean, it's definitely become, I would imagine, a lot more casual these days. But growing up, the bigger the hat, the better.
The bigger the hat, the closer you are to God.
Exactly.
I love that. And it's not theater, is it? It's just, you know, it's kind of, you dress up on Sundays.
Yeah, for sure.
What we call over here the Sunday best. You know,
Sunday best, yeah.
Get suited and booted. Are there memorable costumes and everything you can think of that you were like, this is great, and this is kind of where my love of fashion maybe started?
You know, my mom had this amazing red pantsuit that she'd wear often. It was like this really bright cherry red rendered in like a silk blend. So it was incredibly saturated. My grandmother, one of her favorite colors was, again, like this apple, Granny Smith apple green, and she had it in this tweed dress and matching coat with the matching hat, with the matching shoes. And it just, again, was incredibly arresting and really emotional for me to see people embracing color in that way. And while that was incredibly influential to me, also watching Pokemon on Sunday and those really electric colors coming through a TV screen was also as influential to me. So just sort of seeing how color could influence the way that you perceived a character or a person was really, it says something off within me.
Just to frame the context as well, you're a spring chicken though, aren't you? I mean, are you 30?
30, yeah.
Can we talk about your age or do I get a slap?
No, I'm 30.
No, because I mean, Pokemon to me, what did I grow? I grew up with Enid Blyton.
Yeah.
So that just shows my age. So.
Pokemon, Sesame Street. Yeah, just anything that felt joyful and like, I think there's so many conversations around irony in fashion, especially when it comes to like color and taking up space visually. And I think what resonated with me so much about those outfits growing up, whether it was in church or at a cotillion or at a wedding, people really earnestly finding excitement and joy in color, as opposed to it coming from like some sort of ironic place, was also an interesting note for me.
Do you think, you know, when everybody did get dressed up in their Sunday best, as well as wearing, you know, kind of their fineries out of respect, do you think there was also a little bit of competition going on between all the ladies?
Oh, absolutely.
Who was wearing the best outfit?
Absolutely. I mean, that's par for the course, I think.
Yeah.
A little healthy competition.
Excellent. No, I love all that. So we're going to move on, not too far forward from where we've just been, but also not too far from where you are now. We're moving on to your youth, and you're still a youth in a kind of broader way. What's your color of your youth?
I think probably peaflower tea. It's like a really rich true blue. And I loved the color blue growing up, and I felt like this color specifically holds both like masculine and feminine energy in equal accord. And they're both quite prevalent in the color to me. And like growing up trying to find myself as like a queer person, I felt that obviously blue is a safe choice to wear and to like be seen in and to play with and experiment with. But finding hues that felt electrocuted or jolted or energetic and not so conservative was like my way of, I guess, slightly subverting the color. And I feel like peaflower tea and also lobster from the Carte Blanche collection kind of feel irreverent, but classic in a way. And I think that that really feels like the journey of finding myself when I was a little bit younger.
Because I love blues.
Love.
And Farron Ball fans love blues. I mean, it's probably from a color family, it's probably one of the most, you know, the go-to color family in the Farron Ball color chart. And what I love about both those, you talked about lobster too, is there's such a vibrancy and there's this lovely positivity to both of them. I particularly love, I'm not saying I don't love peaflower tea, I do. I love lobster, and we will come on to that a little bit later.
Yeah.
But I also love the fact you said it's kind of gender fluid is the wrong thing, but it's kind of, it has masculine and feminine properties, which is quite pertinent now, isn't it, when we're not trying to define people by their biology. And, you know, so that's really, really key. I love it. I'm looking for an excuse to use that somewhere here.
You have to.
I do have to. And I've just had this kind of weird overhaul of the house because, you know, we're living with my mother.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit dated. So we've been doing a bit of decorating here.
Love.
And so I'm just waiting to find one more room or another room I can attack again. And that is definitely a go-to color for me. I love it. So do you wear these? You know, these colors, I know they have, you know, resonance of memories for you from your childhood. One, I'd love to dig into the name of that, because especially for UK listeners, they might not know what pea flower tea is.
Yeah, so pea flower tea, it's a plant, but when you sort of create the tea, it emits this really bright, cool blue color, which is the color of pea flower tea. But it's really fun to drink and a really weird color. And so foods that are oddly colored to me are really exciting.
And is the actual flower of this plant or shrub, is it quite a strong blue anyway, or does it become stronger in the infusion of the tea?
I think it becomes stronger with the infusion.
Could you use it as a dye?
I feel like you could. I'm not sure how strongly it would stick into the fibers, but it could work.
Stick with me, darling. I've just sorted your winter fall collection at 24. So
exactly. I'm getting all the ideas.
I'll come and assist you and everything.
Period. Exactly.
So here we go. We're halfway through, Christopher. So what we want to talk about now, and I suppose this is a really big one because this is, you know, your defining decade, although there are only three of them, darling.
I know.
So what is your defining decade color? And obviously we'd love to know a little bit more about what that defining decade is.
I mean, to be honest, I've only really experienced two fully. So I think my 20s would probably be so far my most defining decade. You know, starting a brand, starting a company, graduating college, getting my first job, like all of those firsts kind of happened in my 20s. And I think Sardine would be a great representation of that, sort of taking the same energy of my youth, that sort of love of blue, that love of experimentation, but hopefully elevating it a little bit and increasing the sophistication, I guess, for lack of a better word. I think Sardine would be a nice representation of that.
So again, for people who haven't seen the Carte Blanche collection, this is a paint collection that Christopher created with Farron Boer last year. But Sardine is actually quite reduced and elegant, isn't it? It's got that lovely, almost kind of period feel. It's kind of a knockback blue.
Exactly. And I love the having four different blues in this collection was really fun for me. And there's so much variety in that hue, specifically blue, and being able to take advantage of all of them in this collection was really fun. And yeah, I just feel like the Sardine, Roasted Macadamia, and, you know, we'll get to Cardamom a little bit later, but all of those, again, like really nuanced colors that feel quite liminal, like they sit in between or in betwixt things, was important for me to have in the collection. And I feel like it really represents, hopefully, like a growth that I'm going through right now as a designer and as a person.
So talking of your defining decade more, you know, specifically, can you just give us a tiny little sort of journey of your life? So when did you graduated fashion school in, what, 2016?
Yeah, so I graduated then and I moved to New York in the same year. And then I got my first job at Diane von Furstenberg the year afterwards. So I learned a lot about color and pattern print development, and slowly but surely started making my own work in the bedroom of my Brooklyn apartment with some friends. And people started to notice, and we started showing on the Fashion Week calendar. We just applied. We had no stores. We had no funds. We couldn't pay pattern cutters. And so we did everything ourselves. And in a few months, showed a collection. And a buyer from Net-a-Porter came to look at the collection. And things just kind of started to happen slowly but surely. And I think over the past 4 or 5 years, we've really grown up a lot and become a lot more sophisticated in the way that we're developing clothes, but also the way that we're showing them. I just kind of feel like I've really come into myself in the past few years, and I really have a grasp on what I'm trying to say, the work that I'm trying to make, the people that I'm making the work for, and the world that I want to create. And I feel like as I get older, not to continually use this word, but it's just, I'm just becoming a little more nuanced in the way that I'm moving through the world, I think.
This has all happened pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Not only are you creating this beautiful sort of vision through clothing and colour.
Yeah.
You suddenly have a huge responsibility because you've got more people in your team.
Exactly.
People relying on you now. So that's another weight on your shoulders. So you've got to be creative and caring and managerial and
you know,
all these balls in the air that you're suddenly going, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, that's been really challenging, juggling all the different parts of myself that need to show up in this space for my team. And again, like juggling the creative parts of the job, but also the, again, managerial commercial parts. But I wouldn't be doing anything else.
So can you give us any sneak peeks? So what's the CJR palette for the new collection?
It's a lot earthier than I think people have seen from me in the past. A little tobacco-y kind of, there's like some foliage-y colors, a weird sort of 80s jewel tone, but taken a step back as well, and like a really bright pink. So there's lots of different things happening in the new collection.
That sort of moves us really nicely on to where you are now. So do you want to tell a little bit about your color, where you are now, what it is?
Yeah. So for me, I think my color for now is cardamom. And it's this really rich, organic, dirty feeling brown that has slight green undertone to it. But it's incredibly warm and enveloping and sexy, dare I say, and incredibly sophisticated. But I think right now I'm just trying to be in a place where I'm much more centered, much more present and grounded. And I feel like cardamom is the perfect answer to that for me.
I've kind of got an obsession with this color. So I adore cardamom, but I did kind of say there's a slightly fresh cowpat element to it in terms of color.
Oh, like a poop?
Cowpat.
Oh, love. I mean, exactly. And I think that that's exactly what it is. Like,
yeah,
it's organic feeling. It's real. It's not for everyone, but it's, you know.
I think it's one of the chicest shades, and I think we should all be using kind of more brown, because over here there are kind of generic exterior woodwork colors that we use in the UK a lot, and especially not less so on red brick buildings. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people use white, but there are particular areas where everybody uses this kind of slightly sage gray.
Yeah.
And I am trying to push everybody who wants to do their exterior, who's got lovely kind of, let's say, Cotswold stone or bar stone, to do cardamom on the exterior.
I think it's the chicest color.
So elegant, isn't it? So I've probably done a huge disservice by saying cow poop, because it's so much more than that.
It is, but also, like, I've kind of talked about this before, but for me, there's no hierarchy of reference. So, like, 1980s Christian Lacroix is just as fabulous as Sesame Street. And, like, a really amazing, you know, spicy cardamom is just as fabulous of a reference as cow poop. Like, it's the same energy, and both of them make you kind of feel something, whether it's disgust or delight. And I feel like that's exciting.
And I love the fact that we've just had Christian Lacroix and Sesame Street in the same sentence. I think that's a first.
Why wouldn't you? It makes so much sense to me.
I love it. So this is where we gift you a color, and it's obviously based on everything you said, and it's based on probably a personal feeling of where you are, where you've come from and everything. And also, it's a little bit cheesy because I do love a pun or kind of getting somebody's name in.
Love. But that's fun.
And this color is a really interesting one. So it's an archive color.
I love it already.
Oh, good. Okay. So just to explain to our listeners, so archive are colors that have been retired from our main collection. But, you know, they're still available to buy. You can go into most showrooms or stockists and have them mixed, ready to go, whatever, your order through the website. But, you know, so we never, ever truly get rid of a color. They just go into our archive palette. But this is a color which I adore. And actually, it's really interesting because it's kind of sitting somewhere between lobster and peat. So it's like we've kind of gone back, and it's called St. Giles Blue.
Beautiful.
And I've seen this used, and actually really used in unbelievably surprising ways. There's a great designer in the UK called Ben Pentreath, and he did this really elegant, very big, you know, grand Georgian dining room. You know, huge ceilings and really beautiful ornate plaster.
Yeah.
But the walls are in this. And it took this kind of really elegant, very traditional, you know, quite old school room and made it feel so vibrant and fresh. So this is called St. Giles Blue, but for you, it's called St. Christopher's Blue. So, one, we're gifting you a colour.
Love.
Beatification of Christopher John Rogers.
Yes.
Okay, you okay with that?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been waiting for years. For goodness sake, it took this long. So part of this reason is St. Christopher, obviously, as you know, the patron saint of travel and everything like that.
Yeah.
You've had this phenomenally and really meteoric quick kind of journey. So this is kind of your journey through fashion, your own creativity. But this is also kind of your guide to your future, where you're going now. From your grown up mature phase that you're going through now, let's hope you get a little bit more childish as you get older again.
Amen.
So yeah, amen to that. So St. Christopher's Blue, that's heading your way, because obviously we're not next to each other, but normally I would be gifting you a tin of paint with your own label on. So we'll get that to you as soon as we can.
I'm excited. Thank you.
So I'm holding what we call brush out boards, which are these lovely painted samples that we have to show clients. So this kind of feels sort of honored, and you know, it feels right for you, even though you've gone to the grounded cardman right now.
But you know, two things can be true. We can hold space for this too,
of course. And actually, this would look really beautiful with cardman.
I mean, to me, it does look quite similar to lobster. It feels almost like it's slightly more blue and less green. It's beautiful from what I can see over the screen, but I think it's absolutely stunning. It feels like a sky, like the perfect sky.
Well, you are a darling man.
It's the place to be.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you want to find out more about Christopher, please go and visit his Instagram at Christopher John Rogers. You can also follow us at Farron Ball. Do come and say hello. And if you've enjoyed the conversation today, please do share it with people you love. My guest next week is the chef Sky Gingell. The Cremologist is a Farron Ball and Feast Collective production. The producer is Sarah Cudden. Until the next one, goodbye and hugs.